You're now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning layer ones to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side. Hey, everyone. I just hopped off an exciting podcast with Ahmad, the CEO and founder of Stability AI. Stability AI is one of the companies at the forefront of creating open source AI models. Their most notable project is Stable Diffusion that creates images from text. The company has grown incredibly fast over the past 18 months and is rumored via Fortune to be raising at a multi-billion dollar valuation. We covered a lot of ground on this episode. One interesting realization for me was that Stability AI is focused on creating open source models to augment and push humanity forward, whereas Ahmad views OpenAI as focused on creating one powerful AGI model to rule them all. Very different approaches. The other wild fact was Ahmad said he will soon have the second most powerful public supercomputer in the world to train models. Moving on, Ahmad also shared his view that incumbents will not accrue all value and AI startups have plenty of room to capture value. We talked on culture-specific AI models, alignment and biases, big versus small models, emergent behavior, and the AI bubble. We also discussed whether or not AI will decimate all of our jobs, or in Mark Andreessen's recent view, will instead drive us to be more productive than ever. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on Twitter and give us a shout. We'd love to hear from you. Hey everyone, it's Tommy and welcome back to the Delphi podcast. Today I have on Ahmad, who's the CEO of Stability.ai. Stability.ai is an open source AI company that's at the forefront of the rapidly evolving AI and machine learning space. They're renowned for their dedication to transparency and their commitment to democratizing access to AI tech. Their flagship collaborative product, Stable Diffusion, has been trained on billions of images and represents a significant advancement in the field of text-to-image AI. As a disclosure, we have some investment exposure to Stability. Ahmad, how's it going?
Very good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. I just don't know how you keep going at the speed you're going. AI is so hard to keep up with.
Yeah, it makes Web3 look slow, eh? Web3 time is fast. This is faster.
It really does. How do you handle all this day to day? Like, what is your curation, filtering, priority setting process?
So, you know, it's nice having all these communities that we support and we run ourselves because they can filter a lot of the really interesting papers, like, automatically. And you can see what emerges there. And then you're just having the team that we can discuss these things as they evolve. Because sometimes you literally see like, oh, it's sped up 10 times. You're like, oh my God, I have to update my priors. Also, being in the middle and actually building this tech is always very useful by actually keeping a hold on top of it. And when you build all models of all types, so everything from language to image to video to audio, etc.
I like that. Let's dive right in. You've kind of been on the forefront that you think artificial general intelligence will be this, you know, wild threat to humanity, right? I'm wondering what kind of gives you that confidence. What have you seen that scared you into believing that, you know, the future is a dystopia versus a utopia?
Well, my base principle is that it's not actually, but it could be. And that's why I signed both the FLI letter and this more recent letter. Because right now, like these models, the best way to think about them is like really talented grads that occasionally get off their meds. And that's because we feed them the whole internet. We feed them junk. And that's really unsafe. That's why you get the AI going to Kevin Rooms at the New York Times and saying, I love you, leave your wife, and even crazier stuff than that. But I think this is something we need to address now. While there's only two companies that can build GPT-4 level models in terms of OpenAI and DeepMind. In a few months, there'll be a whole bunch of companies that can do that as the new chips come on. So my base is that if we ever get to this AGI of crazy greatness, it will be like that movie Her with Scarlett Johansson. It'll be like humans are boring and then bugger off. But on the way there, we could get a lot of dangers. And again, we would have increasingly unhinged AIs, particularly when you combine humans with AI, because humans can be quite nasty at times. And, you know, you're going to see a wave of fake news and deep fakes and all sorts of other things, as well as potentially more that we just got to build mitigations against right now, because this stuff is coming fast, right?
Yeah. What do you think is the core thing that AI and robots are going to optimize for to that will make them dangerous against humans, right? Like, I read Mark Andreessen's post this morning, and he has a bit of a different view because he thinks that, like, the need for labor isn't finite. And with AI, we get this huge productivity boost and basically producing, you know, more code, more jobs, more economic interest. I guess your take is not on the economic side. It's more on the, these things are just going to be out to get us view. Is that right?
No, I mean, my view is nuanced. I think there's a possibility they could be out to get us if they misalign. But I think it is massive abundance in general, but also this potential of a panopticon. So if we take the three, like, how can they be out to get us? The YouTube organizations have slowed down AIs, right? And we can see, think of them as algorithms, you know? Look at YouTube. YouTube optimized for engagement on its algorithm, which was extreme content, which ISIS took over. And that's why ISIS videos got engaged on YouTube, because they thought engaging content sells ads, right? All this kind of stuff. They didn't need to do that, but it was still misaligned. Organizations are misaligned occasionally. Like, look at the German nation under Nazis. The Germans are the most sensible people in the world. They have still committed massive atrocities, again, with the slowdown AI. If you look at kind of the utopia side of things, actually, maybe if I reverse that, some other examples of this is there was an AI that was used to create vaccines and things. You put a negative sign on it and it created nerve gas. If you look at things like Stuxnet, which was this virus that caused Iranian centrifuges to explode. What if an adversary created Stuxnet-type viruses to take down national infrastructure? That would cause real human damage. There are many more, but again, my brain is messed up, so I don't want to get into it. Number two is the abundance side of things. I think this AI will bring education to every child. One-on-one, they'll have their own ChatGPT-type things. It'll bring personalized healthcare. It'll bring the productivity gains, but then you might need less people. And so that is dangerous. How much do we have? Mass white-collar unemployment. But I do believe on the net, it'll be positive. The final thing is the panopticon. We already see media control of narratives. If there is no open alternative, then you will see governments controlling AI more and more, and it's a massive centralizing force. What happens if it guides every part of your mind and they cut it off? You are cut off from the hive mind. And this is why I usually add this quote, not your weights, not your brain. And then one of the Twitter commentators had a much better version, which is not your models, not your mind. You know, if it's centrally controlled, then you will put more and more of your mind on it. And, you know, there will be that panopticon forever is a potential. So I think those are three different scenarios, each one of which has its own nuance. But this is so new and so fresh, it's tough to convey the nuance. You know, it's the headlines. It'll kill us all, or it'll save us all, or the reality is a mixture of all these things because it's such a generalized technology.
Do you remember watching that Black Bear episode? The one where the army people have the chips in their head and the government convinces them that the people they're killing are these monsters, but in reality, they're just, you know, normal humans. Is that kind of the world you're describing on part three there?
Yeah. Well, no, it's more like just the propaganda we see today. You know, like entertaining ourselves to death in the person and type, but it could be that. I believe it was Men Against Fire with the neural implant mass that had augmented reality.
You're right.
I did post a thing, you know, like there's this meme of Mark Zuckerberg, you know, like if you die in the metaverse, you die in real life. You know, so maybe that'll be the case as we get more and more into this metaverse type thing.
How do you think we're going to thread the needle on that side? Like, sorry to interrupt, but like, do you think that, I don't know, like if we start creating real regulations around stability or around open AI, like, are you worried that we get into a, you know, a world where the government just controls everything? Like, I don't think we can trust the government to not exert as much power as they can.
This is the thing behind Web3, right? The need for decentralization or distribution. And this is, the whole of Internet 2 was based on AI. Google, Microsoft, Meta, all these things, well, Google and Meta in particular, AI. Yeah, there was no AI in Web3. Now is the AI going to be like the China social credit score system? Again, Black Mirror episode Nosedive, where we all have scores and we look after each other, a panopticon of control? Or will it be used to create an intelligent internet where each of us has our own AI models that work for us and our objective functions? Every person, company, country, culture. I don't know. I think that's a decision we have to make in the coming years. But it's coming soon because they said governments could regulate it. I mean, regulation favors the incumbents, and we are pretty much the incumbent in open source. And this is a scary, ridiculous thing because open, auditable models, well, you know how the sausage is made, not these black boxes, will run all the governments and regulated entities. And that's insane if you think about it, right? Like, and then who's going to be deciding on those regulations? Well, everyone's asking us. I just don't think that's right, but what else can you do? So we could be the sole potential avenue by which open source models get released. Although it's good for my business, I don't think that's good for society, right?
I think that's an interesting conversation. We should go down and jump ahead on alignment, like figuring out how these models should account for all human views and things like that. So could you maybe share a bit more on your views on alignment and stability's approach?
So I think that all technology is biased and all is a function of its training data and the creator, especially this. It's not possible to have an unbiased AI because these learned principles, and it's what principles you have, differ from nation to nation. The collectivist East versus the libertarian West, etc. So my take was to create open data sets and models for every nation and culture and have AIs that teach kids and learn from kids so that you can have a diversity of views. My take was to move away from scrapes. Again, we were the first one to openly show our data sets, only company to offer opt-out of our models, because scrapes are garbage and we're feeding these language models garbage, so no wonder they turn insane. I think alignment should be focused on the upstream versus downstream, the data that goes inside, how you feed the model, how you teach the model, as opposed to the actions of the model. Because if we ever create an entity more capable than us, the only way we can control it is by taking away its freedom. And I think that's very difficult to do with an entity that is more capable than us. Alignment is orthogonal to freedom on the outputs as opposed to the inputs. And so this is why, you know, we're moving fast to do national models and data sets and distribute this around the world, because that is more likely to enable us to survive if we get to AGI or even pre-AGI. And again, like I said, my base principle is that if we ever have a superhuman AI, it'll probably be bored with us and just bugger off. But I could be wrong.
That's a pretty cool take. I haven't heard that before. So basically what you're saying is you want to control the data that goes into train the model versus worrying about policing it after the fact.
You do both, but I think the bigger impact will be the data that goes in the model. Rubbish in, rubbish out. Again, think of it like a graph. If the curriculum is bad, what's going to happen? If the teaching mechanisms are bad, it will be bad. Right now, we are taping open the eyes, the pseudo-eyes of these AIs, and forcing them to watch all of YouTube. If I did that to you, you would turn mad as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whereas what if I showed you good stuff? Like I said, as an example, what if we gave an entire nation tablets with AI on, and with the AI taught the kids and learned from the kids, and its objective function was activating that kid's potential, and then we fed that data to a language model? That would be data that is optimized for achieving the potential of kids. That is good data. Yeah, and it's more likely to have an aligned AI on the other side.
It's pretty cool. I mean, if we were, let's like go through an example here. Like if you were to cut off Reddit completely from being a data source for your model, but now on the flip side, I'm looking for like real reviews and people's experiences, and all I'm getting is like these paid articles on Google. Like, sure, we cut out a lot of spam on Reddit and like really bad things, but we're also like cutting off a data source that's like partially like really good, right? So I guess to your point, there's a lot of nuance, right, on how we classify what goes in.
Yeah, and so my take is tokenize national broadcaster data to reflect the culture of a country. Do large-scale feedback loops on education and healthcare and other things, and use that to feed into national data sets and models. Take national healthcare data anonymized, and again, it's national infrastructure and international and global commons infrastructure. So just like we talked about blockchains a lot in the past, you know, these are the rails of the future. These are the information rails of the future, and it's the commons. And we should not be using Redis and other things because we cannot discern what is good and bad. Like StableLM, our first release, had lots of Reddit, and it was bad. And we have a blog post coming out against that soon because a lot of people like use more Reddit, so we maxed it out. And now we're going to show how we believe you can make good, which is more structured, coherent data sets that are in there. Because we can always continuously teach it. You could have a kindergarten AI that you then put to high school, that you then put to university. You can train it on different data sets and customize data sets if that happens, if you can see how the sausage is made, if you can see how it has been taught. What is its diploma? No, what's the word? transcript. You don't know what the transcript is of the AIs that you're using right now with GPT-4 and Anthropic and others.
That's pretty cool. So I think if I'm understanding you correctly, your view is that every like country or region will have their own model to reflect their culture. And then I guess as a second order benefit, those cultures or countries would choose what they want to train the model, which would help make the output safer, but also reflect their state of mind.
Exactly. Like, humans are made up of stories. That's how we scale as a society. But text could never let us capture the diversity of human opinion, even though it let us scale our organizations. And most of the frustration in organizations is the lossy information. The notes you take down after a meeting, Salesforce, PowerPoint presentations, they're all painful. Whereas talking as we are now is the easiest thing in the world. The example I give of this is Moana, great is it Pixar movie, whereby Maui, the demigod, is said to use a fishhook to pick up the sun from the ocean. Why is that? It's because all the French Polynesians ever knew was the horizon. So obviously that's how the sun came up. It's Maui with his fishhook. These AIs can understand context. They can understand principles. And I think it's the missing piece that we've had. And I think that's just super, super interesting when you have to start to dig down into that.
Ahmad, to play devil's advocate a bit, it seems like it's a hard business model. Like stability's charging $20 a month user, pretty easy to get some sticky lock-in. Like, so you'd basically have to sell models per country or train them per country? What would be the business model there for stability?
The models are very interesting. They're like codecs. They're these little files. Words come in, images come out. Built in a very deliberate way. So if you have in the pharmaceutical stable chats, that is a specific model that you can then train inside your data center or cloud. And we're doing partnerships with all the clouds and on-prem partners and system integrators to do that. And we get a share of the revenue from all of that. So we will be the layer one for open auditable AI. Which is needed for all of the regulated, IP-rich, and private data in the world. The subscriptions are nothing. You know, that's just more experimentation and things like that. And then the final part of our business is custom models. We're the only company in the world that can build a model of any type that you own. There's a lot of demand for that, and it will only increase. Because you need supercomputers, talent, and data, and we have all of those. So we've got a pretty good business model, as opposed to others in the proprietary side. Well, you're competing against Google and OpenAI, who are non-economic actors and can take their costs down to zero. So what is your edge there? This is why we are partnering with Amazon and others to get our models to where the data is. It is why we have the ability to train custom models. And again, our supercomputers at a discount due to long-term advantages and deals. So we have very, very healthy margins as and when we turn those things on. I do not believe now is the right time for monetization, though. Because this is still deep tech that is moving from research to engineering. And so any model that we have today will not be used in a year. Instead, I think it's about code creation and understanding what the design patterns are as we move from the iPhone 2G to 3G. So I think in a year, we'll already be at an iPhone X level.
Ahmad, which of those two buckets do you think will be the driver of revenue? I mean, just to contextualize the business a bit, like which side do you think will be the lion's share for the top line for stability?
Snowflake, through its Amazon reseller partner network, did $900 million of revenue last year. And we've got a much bigger TAM than that. Every single one of the 100,000 SageMaker customers will use generative AI, and they will want open auditable models for their private data. Like all the Delphi internal documents, you're not going to send to OpenAI. You'll go to your Amazon cloud, and you will train on our model, and then you'll use that. You might combine it with GPT-4 for the non-private stuff to organize your data. And think about how many companies in the world will do that, pretty much all of them. So my take is our Google search business equivalent is standardized models of every modality, sectoral variants that are commercially licensed, and national variants of those. And you can mix and match these primitive building blocks to turn your static data of any type into intelligence. And so that by far will be the biggest. The custom model creation is more to learn about how to implement these models, because the models by themselves are not good enough. You also need playbooks, design patterns, and more. So, you know, I think that's important.
It's a cool model. So Do you think that you'll get any pushback from people? Like, if I'm thinking through like Delphi's, like all of our research library, internal chats, everything, like, do you think you'll get any pushback from companies saying, hey, you know, we're unsure if Amazon is stealing our data to trade, you know, train competitors' models or anything like that? Or
no, I mean, there's guarantees and you never pay us, you just pay Amazon. If you're using SageMaker right now, then you own the model. Again, your model, your mind. But we have a mechanism by which as you train and fine tune and use those models, we get paid from that. That's the Amazon Bedrock service.
That's
your alternative.
Cool.
You know, and it'll be on every cloud, on-prem, every device, revenue share, license fees, royalty. And again, we are getting paid because we've brought value by standardizing this. So you have a VC American stable chat that already knows about VC terms and things that you train your research on, you know?
So
and
it's like...
It's also important because taking the best of open and then bringing data and distribution to it means that our hurdle is having the best open model. If someone else releases an open model that's better, we can bring data and distribution to it. Whereas the proprietary players, their hurdle is having the best model full stop, which is very difficult when you're competing against the Googles and Microsofts and others of the world.
That makes sense. And I guess on the training on a go forward, like the learning, is there a revenue generation event from that as the models get better and learn from more data? Or is that just set it and forget it?
No, again, these are like undergraduates, right? So you give them a curriculum, you learn, and then you send them out into the world. OpenAI and the others is like taking your graduates and hiring them from McKinsey, whereas ours is hiring them inside internally. So they will get continuously better as we learn from generalized things and we have more advanced architectures and we standardize and engineer these. But, you know, there's no continuous learning. You own your models with us. And I think that's the way it should be.
You mentioned a bit earlier in the podcast about like every country having their own model. If a business were to build on you through Amazon, would they like sort of predefine a country or culture that they want to influence their model or learning, which then influences their app? Or I'm a little confused
yes.
there.
It's like Lego. You can mix together different models. So you have a model library and then you pick Indian VC stable chat and boom, you've got an Indian VC model that speaks Hindi. You know, or you might speak in some Marathi and some English into that. So you can pick and choose your data sets and your models from our library, licensed and open. And then you can build the base and foundation that you need. So whatever you need, the graduate gets popped out, gets baked in the compute and then out it comes. But for most of the stuff, you can just do it off the shelf. You don't need to train your own model or even fine tune or mix your own model.
That is really cool. I mean, on the concept of models though, why do you think, I'm not sure if you want to comment on it, but like, why do you think Sam and OpenAI have been so hard set on kneecapping the growth and like forming this regulatory moat? Like, it just seems like it just goes against history.
Well, I mean, the objective of OpenAI is to build an AGI that will then stop all other AGIs. And they themselves have said that AGI is an existential threat to humanity, the end of democracy, and the end of capitalism. And they are deliberately trying to build that. So
that's crazy.
I mean, again, this is their own words. Of course you would do this. Of course you would not release things. Of course you would, you know, even go against open source. They'll open source some things like GPT-3, it's fine. But they are not an open source company. Their objective is AGI. You have to understand that. And again, these are not my words. This is their words. So you have to look at people and what they actually say. And then this all makes sense against that regard. We are actually a different TAM entirely to OpenAI. But again, Sam is not trying to build a company there. He is on a race to build this technology first that will change civilization as we know it. Because we have an entity that is more capable than a human. Will he do it or not? Who knows? You know, will it be aligned or not? It'll be more aligned with our open data sets that they can use. Do I think it's wise? No, I think it's dumb. You know, it's like, it's completely uncertain. Why would you want to build that? Just focus on educating every child, bringing universal healthcare, allowing anyone to create anything they can imagine. That's what our preference is.
Do you think there's any sense of, or any positive angle at putting yourself in his position? Like, do you think that he wants to do this so another superpower or a terrorist or somebody, you know, can't and we front run them? Is there any credence to what he's doing?
There is only one reasonably plausible way to stop another AGI from coming, and that's to build an AGI first that stops all other AGIs, and that's called a pivotal action. And then you assume that your AGI will be good, and it will stop all the evil ones from coming. And that then gives you, if you control that AGI, control over the whole world. And again, this is just a very simple logical thing. This is all very logical, it's all very simple, and again, this is why they are acting in the way that they do.
I think it's pretty cool framing that we're getting to. I mean, would you, I think my summary from the convo so far is that you're building open source AI models to help productivity, whereas your view is that OpenAI is viewing or building a killer AGI.
Not a killer AGI, an AGI to rule them all, AGI to bind them effectively. Where, so it's about automation, whereas we're about augmentation. So that's why our mission is to build the foundation to activate humanity's potential. And, you know, our motto is make people happier. And we had to do this at a breakneck pace, because if we didn't do it, nobody else would. Imagine a world without stability right now. Like, you know, you've had Jensen, they just raised $43 million Series A. You know, they're very nice. They're doing distributed training. It's not enough. I have 500 petaflops of compute lined up to scale, which is national level OpenAI DeepMind level. You know, I have communities of hundreds of thousands of developers and, you know, an amazing team that can do any model of any modality. And again, the only company in the world that can do that part of it now. And I'm going to build national models and subsidiaries that are owned by the people of those countries as national champions, so that they can bring this technology to activate the potential of the people. And these models can be owned by the people themselves. And absent that, this won't exist. It'll be chaos.
That's crazy. I'm not, the numbers get a little confusing for me. Could you, how big is your model or your training set there, your GPU? Like, what is the comparison?
So the fastest supercomputer in the UK is 640 A100s. Cambridge One cost 100 million. Last July, before we did our seed round, Amazon built us a 4,000 A100 supercomputer, about 50 petaflops, which is would have been the eighth fastest in the world. We have 7,000 now, and we're going to an equivalent potentially of 70,000. So that's 100 times faster than the fastest supercomputer in the UK. And that's what you need to be at the big boy table.
Jesus, what does that put you on a ranking of 1 through 10 or 1 through 20 or something like
it
that?
It would be the public second fastest supercomputer in the world.
Wow. Behind OpenAI or?
No, they're not public with theirs. Again, we have some indications. Behind, what's it, Frontier or Summit, in one of the US supercomputers that's 1 exaflop. Again, we can scale up from there, but you need to coordinate and consolidate. And again, that's why we stepped in. We are probably the fourth largest provider of compute to academia in the US, because academia can keep up. We fund independent contributors and grants and all sorts of things. And again, this is how we can try such crazy things. So we turn around our grants in a day. And it was needed. But again, without us, distributed training just doesn't work. You need all the compute lined up so you can move it back and forth really quickly. People are trying to bring like water guns to a machine gun fight without super proper infrastructure like this. And again, just think about it. It's 100 times. Right now, we're 10 times faster than the fastest supercomputer in the UK or NASA's supercomputers put together, and we're going to 100 times faster. This is insane. Like, sometimes we get language model runs that break, and you're like, what's happened? It's an ECC error. What caused that? A solar flare. And so you're like, you know, language model run stopped because the sun is angry with us today. You know, like, this is literally national. No, it's more than national levels of compute. And it's hard. It's really, really, really
hard. How did you get that level of, how did you get that big? Like, it seems like it's so hard for people to build, like, mining camps and get GPUs, and there's chip shortages, but it seems like you kind of popped out here with like this, you know, soon to be second largest public. How do you get to that level?
I did some great deals, and I was, you know, straightforward in the alignment. There was no risk in doing this. Like, we had headlines about us burn and things like that. Majority of our burn is supercompute that nobody has access to. These chips aren't available in the market. Everyone's messaging us all the time about it. I could turn around, do foundation models as a service, make $100 million a year in profit right now and just retire, but this technology is needed. We need to get it out there, you know? And again, when you align and you do the deals, you borrow balance sheets of people more powerful than you. Like, people say, why don't you run your own GPUs? I'm like, why would I buy $600 million worth of supercompute? You know, like, I'm 18 months old as a company. So instead, you do good deals and you make sure that you keep control.
Do the partners you're dealing with, like, do they get anything out other than, like, I guess, solid revenue traction? And like, are they achieving anything?
We did very good deals. So, for example, Amazon built us a supercomputer cluster, and the vast majority of their GPUs in December were running Stable Diffusion. So it maxed out their AI compute. As we build open data sets, it will increase, again, demand for AI chips, which, again, is beneficial for all clouds and chip manufacturers and others who are our partners. So a rising tide lifts all boats, and we are the biggest capitalist of all. So we are complementary to everyone. And again, this is the logic and the forecast that I showed to everyone in order to do these deals, because that's what we're good at. And we can cover all of the gamut, because right now everyone's focusing on language models. In a few years, the entire of media will be upended. Creation of HD movies, music, all these things.
Ahmad, I'm really enjoying this combo. Let me know if I'm out of my depth here a little bit, but if you have this really large training area, right, but it's partitioned to train, you know, call it 10 or 100 models at any given time for various countries and organizations, does that put you at a disadvantage versus OpenAI using their GPUs, their power to train a sole central model? Like, do they achieve some sort of AI leaps and bounds that you can't target because yours will be partitioned? Or am I off here on the thought process?
We also have access to national supercomputers, so we have even more. But the era of big models is over. Even OpenAI, I think, are realizing small, nimble models working together, just like a group, are the way forward. So look, GPT-4 can pass the bar exam, medical licensing exam, just about everything. But how many generalists do you know that can beat specialists? And know-it-alls are also really annoying. So now we're entering the era of specialist models, which is about training more models in parallel, understanding how to optimize them. As again, we move from these things being research artifacts to engineering artifacts. So Stable Diffusion, for example, took 100,000 gigabytes of images, and the app was a 2 gigabyte file. There's no way you can compress that, right? It's something else. It learned principles. But when we actually analyze the usage of Stable Diffusion, we find that of 128 different clusters of concepts, only 8 are used regularly. So we could potentially decrease it to 200 megabytes that could generate any image of any type. How insane is that? Where is the lower limit? Nobody knows. GPT-4 itself is probably only 100 gigabytes. This magical 100 gigabyte file that somehow has the knowledge of the whole internet can pass any exam. It shouldn't be capable of that. Hallucinations are a misnomer. There's no way that these models should be capable of what they're capable of now, and we've only begun to optimize them.
What do you mean by that? Like, they're not supposed to be capable of what? Like, do you mean that we don't fully understand how they're working?
Yeah, I mean, again, let's take a practical example of this. GPT-4 is amazing. I use it all the time. It can pass the bar exam, medical licensing exam, GMAT, everything, right? It's probably 100 gigabytes because it fits on 2 H100s. Does that make sense that there is this thing that can do anything that's just 100 gigabytes? I mean, I think Diablo 4 is probably like 100 gigabytes, right? Stable Diffusion is 2 gigabytes and it can generate any image of any type. Does that make sense? It does not. But right now, they're just at the bulk phase, not the cut phase. We haven't optimized them yet. Where is the lower limit in speed or size? We don't know. And again, this is why it's impossible, because you, again, take the example of Stable Diffusion. 100,000 gigabytes of images into 2 gigabytes is 50,000 to 1 compression. Have you ever seen anything like that?
That is wild.
Right? Right? Like, probably GPT-4 is probably 10 trillion words in 100 gigabytes. That's not possible. Something else. It learns like the human brain principles. And yet somehow with these principle-based analyses and guessing the next word, it can pass the bar and go to Stanford. Someone will probably do that and it'll wear a lovely little robe, you know, and go in this little robot tracks, you know, as a little iPad or something. I don't know. This is wild. It's something never been seen before. And it's different from big data. Big data took large amounts of data, extrapolated it, to things we know before, whereas these models are few shot learners, as it's called. So give them a few examples and they learn from the patterns they have inside. They're the missing part of intelligence, the type 1 versus type 2 brain.
Ahmad, this is, I agree with you that it's just insane. I listened to Stephen Wolfram's podcast on Lex Fridman, and his view was awesome. But one of his points was that maybe what the LLM's doing just isn't that complicated. Like maybe we think language is hard, but in reality, it's really not that crazy, right? We only use a subset of the words. It's not that confusing, yada, yada. Do you think maybe we're just realizing that we're not as smart as we thought?
Could be. I mean, look, half of people are dumber than average, right?
That is fair.
Look, I mean, again, like babies can understand this stuff. This is something else. And again, people haven't understood the sheer massive impact of all of this, and it's going to come. The ability to scale humans has been, I believe, solved, because these are talented grads at your fingertips. Half of all code in GitHub is AI generated. 40% improvement in productivity for programmers. What happens when you can push a button and scale infinitely grads that can write, sing, draw, do business analysis? What does that do to your personal life, your business, your economy? It's going to be insane. To give you an example as well, the mechanisms by which we interact with them are very boring right now. One-to-one is one thing, but like Meta did something, a paper called Cicero, where they took 8 language models, got them to talk to each other, and it outperformed humans at the game of diplomacy. How insane is that?
That's crazy.
Is there? So if they occasionally go off their meds, just get them to watch each other's output. Guess what? It gets better.
I don't know really anything about neuroscience, but I mean, do you think that it is a little deceiving though to say that the models are so small? Like, I mean, they're trained on so much data. Like, I mean, even growing up as a kid, like we'll bump into a table 1,000 times. We're not going to remember every time, right? But we're eventually kind of, you know, we see a sharp edge, we avoid it, we store that little bit of data, and we move on. Do you think maybe we're being a little deceptive in that we're not accounting for the mass amounts of training and data and compute to make that file so small?
No, I mean, this is the nature of it. We flipped the equation. It used to be cheap to gather data, big data, and then expensive to run it. You would need giant server farms like Google or Meta, right? We've now made it expensive to train the models and cheap to inference the models. Again, you can run Stable Diffusion and some of the language models now on iPhones. That's no data usage at all. The human brain is 25 watts. GPT-4 is 1,400. Or you can probably get it in like 1,000. That's insane. It's fundamentally insane because you're capable of things now that you're never capable of before by flipping that equation, whereby compute and training is expensive, but it's done once, and then these primitives go out across the world and they can do insane, crazy things. And yes, they do learn if you tell them, but in most cases, they have no memory because we haven't given them memory yet. We can, but that's the next step.
Spreading across the world is a good segue. You've mentioned in the past that giving everybody a device with a large language model would sort of lead to the greatest kind of increase in human productivity that we can find. How do you think that'll play out? How do we do that?
Give every child in Africa a tablet with an AI that teaches the kids and learns from the kids. It's the best food for language models, but also it'll adapt to, are they auditory, visual, or dyslexic, etc. I can guarantee you that education system within 2 years will be the best education system in the world. Nothing beats one-to-one tuition. So what's the productivity increase from that? Insane. What will be the productivity increase when we can have discussions like this that gets added to our iApple or individual knowledge base? And then you can have 100 agents before your next call analyze everything I've ever said and come up with the best way to talk. This is all coming. And again, it's going to be crazy.
So I don't think search is nearly as powerful as LLMs, but I feel like this may have been tried in the past with like Google giving people in Africa a tablet, allow them to search the web, yada, yada. I'm not sure if it's happened, but it seems like it probably did. I mean, is that like a corollary? Because I feel like that didn't totally take off. Like, it's really hard to do that in practice, right?
Well, yeah. And now's the only time you can do it because you need these models and you can get down to the edge. To be self-adaptive learning complex systems.
Yeah. I guess it becomes a second nature to want to keep and protect that device, obviously, if it's helping you so much.
Yeah, but it's more the AI. Everyone should have their own personal AI or hundreds. And look out for you, as opposed to being owned by someone else. Again, are you going, not your keys, not your crypto, not your models, not your mind? This is the point that we stand at.
I love that tagline. You said AI has a tendency to generate emergent behaviors, and that kind of freaks me out. Like, yeah, like definitely freaks me out a lot. Like, what are some of the ones that have scared you, or I don't know, you've seen?
So look, as you scale the compute and the data, there are indications that maybe it's learned to lie or tell mistruths. You know, like sometimes the best way to get it to answer a good question is you compliment it or you threaten it. It learns to add, it learns to subtract, it learns to multiply. These are weird, and we don't know exactly how it learns these things, because it learns the principles from the data that goes into it with, you know, big training. So like our current supercomputer cluster, for example, is 2.8 megawatts of electricity. It's a chunky old beast, right? It'll get like 15 megawatts or something like that. And so we don't know where the emergence is, but right now there are these little tiny files. What happens when you start chaining them together? That's like chaining together the parts of the human brain. What happens when you put them out there? Again, look at Stuxnet. It caused Iranian centrifuges to explode. That's like a virus. You get to the bacteria level now and then beyond very quickly, I think. And that's a concern.
That is a phenomenal movie. I think it's called Zero Days. Mm-hmm. Stuxnet?
Yeah.
That was wild.
And again, like the bad actors have this technology because they just download it on a USB stick and they're done. It's just 100 gigabytes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, like obviously the training becomes really compute intensive, need a relationship, yada, yada. But if a terrorist is able to download a model that works that's small in size, it's sort of game over. Like they pass around a 100 gigabyte file that could destroy systems. Like how do we defend against that?
Probably another AI. It's a nasty race dynamic.
It is wild.
We know that the bad guys have this technology because again, it's so simple. Why would they not do it? Why build your own supercomputer when you just steal these model weights? And these models are not complicated, actually. So the Palm 540B model, which was Google's biggest model, one of our researchers replicated it in 216 lines of PyTorch. But you need a supercomputer and really interesting data for that. This isn't like one of my favorite stories is Operation Merlin. So in 2000, the Clinton administration wanted to delay Iran's nuclear activities. So they had a bright plan. They went to a Russian kind of operative guy, like defector, and they gave him some plans for a nuclear warhead. But they made some subtle adjustments to it so Iran would go down the wrong path, you know, for years. And so he comes back and he says, I've sold this to the Iranians. We don't know they're CIA operatives. Oh, but by the way, there was an error in the plan, so I corrected it because he was a nuclear physicist. And that's how we know that Iran has nuclear weapon capability. They still needed years to build it. You can check it out on Wikipedia. It's quite funny. Surprise not being made into a movie. Whereas this technology, you don't need to spend years building it. You whack it on a GPU and boom, it's running. And you've got your own GPT-4 or whatever comes next. And that's concerning. And again, how do you survive against that? So the Scientologists became recognized as a religion partially because they swamped the IRS with letters and lawsuits until the IRS gave up. The IRS's technology could not keep up with their denial of service attack. This AI can now do human perfectly realistic voices, faces, language, convincing. Oh, it's going to be a bit of a shit show.
If the NSA came to you tomorrow and they said, hey, Ahmad, you know, this is the dystopia, you know, you're right, they're attacking everything. We need a powerful model to learn faster and protect us. We need you to shut down stability, only work for us. We'll pay $1 zillion. Like, is that like the path that they protect themselves? Like, how does our government protect, let's say, US citizens?
All government and regulated industry will run on open, auditable models. They cannot run on black boxes. You need to know what the transcripts of these models are and what school they went to, right? And that's where stability is. For all regulated, private, and IP-rich data, use our models only on ones. So open is inevitable. Is it coordinated and is there a shelling point? And that's why I created stability for, to be the shelling point. A stability in every nation is a national champion doing national data sets and stability for every sector. To be the layer one for AI, the building blocks in which they build. If the NSA want a model to compete against others, they go to one of the proprietary players. It's a different TAM, it's a different market. They all seem to be the same AI, but they're not.
I like that. There's definitely a difference on the models. I guess just shifting gears, there's a couple of things I want to get to before we close out. What do you think is the limiting factor right now to AI growth? I mean, I know you mentioned that the move is towards smaller models, so maybe it's not GPUs and access to training, or is it data? What is the limiting factor right now?
The limiting factor is just compute. And so with the H100s, TPU, next generations, and other things coming online, that will be unlocked. And then there's a question of data, but now we have synthetic data sets and other things.
That is crazy. So that's pretty much near term.
Yes. By next year, probably 20 companies will be able to train GPT-4 level models. Yeah, it's going to be fun. And again, like I said, that's why we got to get together.
All right, now for the fun one. I mean, we talked on emergent behaviors, but the intelligence question comes up a lot. I was personally really scared by this and then spent a lot of time reading posts and spent a lot more time on Stephen Wolfram's posts, like understand neural nets, and that kind of gave me a lot of safety because it's just, you know, LLMs are probabilistically kind of finishing our sentences the right way. I didn't really get that it has pure, like, real intelligence. Are you of the opinion that we're there, on our way there? Are you scared? Are you excited? Where are we on that side?
It just depends entirely on the definition of intelligence. Again, like, these things can do crazy things. We've never seen it before. If I told you a year ago or 2 years ago that you'd see what you have now, you'd say it's impossible. But every morning I wake up and there's 5 more impossible things before breakfast.
So kind of your view is that, like, on a narrow sense, they are intelligent? Like, it is the calculator in our pocket kind of thing?
You will talk to these models and they are convincing. Go look at Character AI. Right to the top of the App Store, and, you know, people are having conversations like 2 hours a day on average. Look at Replica AI. It was created as a mental health chatbot. Then they realized you could charge $300 a year for erotic roleplay. On February 14th, they turned it off. And 68,000 people joined the Reddit and said, why do you lobotomize my girlfriend?
That is insane.
The output's indistinguishable. I call it the Valentine's Day Massacre. It's very sad, but also kind of funny. If you can't distinguish the outputs, then again, what is intelligence? Yeah. And this is even without the reinforcement learning stuff like the AlphaGo's and the Dota 2 and StarCraft playing AIs that can be agentic. Once you start combining deep learning with RL, and you've got that anyway with the reinforcement learning with human feedback that takes these big, grotesque deep learning models and tunes them back to, like, human, vague humanity, it's going to get a bit insane.
Do you think that we achieve general AGI by linking together a lot of these narrow intelligence AI models, or do you think that we have, or is it one model that rules them all, or is that the one model?
I'm the foggiest. But I do believe that collective intelligence will probably beat one generalized intelligence. I believe in swarm intelligence as a key balancing factor. So my vision is of a world that are standardized stability models everywhere for private data, working with coordinating AIs, that if there is ever an AGI or a big problem, can unite us as a human colossus to solve it all. We have enough knowledge, resources to solve any problem. We can split the atom, we can go to Mars. But it's not in the right place, and that's what AI is for. AI is fundamentally information classification. And now we have the best classifiers we've ever seen. So we can finally defeat Moloch, this Carthaginian demon of disorder, you know, from the Al Ginsberg poem, and build better, more intelligent AI systems, our organizations. So we don't have to be so sad anymore. And I think that, if we do it properly, is a really positive view of the future. And I think that does defeat a single centralized AI. Because humans and AI beat AI to do it by itself.
That is really cool. I mean, to play devil's advocate, why do you think stability doesn't get more credit for being open source? Like, why do people look at OpenAI and say, you know, this is great, there's moving us forward, but no, like, only a subset of smart people, like, know that it's all closed off. Like, I don't feel like most people know that.
I mean, look, we don't do much press. I just do podcasts. We're building up our capacity, but again, 18, 19 months old. I think what we've done is insane. And we've gone from last year, we were working out of our house. And now we're a scale up with 180 people in a year. We'll be a multinational. And so now's the time where we're codifying and solidifying everything. And we're like, let's do this all together.
So you have a finance background, Ahmad. Do you feel like we're in an AI bubble? And do you are you worried about the financialization aspect, like the mass funding, the quick rounds, anything like that?
We're just at the start of the .AI bubble. This is nearly the biggest bubble of all time. $1 trillion is going into this sector. I've spoken to companies that are investing $2 billion each into this and with nothing to invest in except for maybe us. And we've got one with a decent business model, I think, that's pretty unique. So I think you'll see hundreds of billions going into this. You'll see companies adopting it as it moves to enterprise ready in a year. Right now it's only suitable for consumer and it's going to be crazy. The dot-com bubble, all these other bubbles, there isn't a single company in the world that would not use this technology in one form or another. All of finance will be affected by it because all of finance is only two things, securitization and leverage. Telling a story about an asset is how well you tell that story. And it just goes on and on and on.
Ahmad, one of the things that I think me and my cohorts on the VC side wrestle with is, you know, things that might you might laugh at, but like moats and value capture. And the moat side is really tough. Like, I view it as sort of having proprietary algorithms, proprietary data, you know, legit business integrations. Do you view there being any moats in AI companies, especially for AI startups?
We have a moat. Bedrock is a moat. The repetition of that across others is a moat because we have data and distribution locked in. And I'm going to make sure to lock that in as I take this from country to country to country. You know, you go to a South Asian country, you bring AI there this year, they will all use your technology. So I think there's massive first mover advantage. And again, data distribution is key. But for most of them, it's very difficult, particularly because we exist for open alternatives. And then OpenAI and Google exist, who are non-economic actors that can drive down the cost of inference to zero. That's tough. And that's why you have to go back to just building good products. You know, mental health, other things. Anywhere where you don't have enough scaled humans and you could benefit from pushing a button and making more, and then handling data distribution and others will benefit from this. And we can build some great businesses that way. And again, you don't sacrifice building a good business. The only thing to be aware of is that you must move faster than anyone else, or the incumbents will adopt this technology faster than you do. Because making these models is hard, implementing these models is easy. And people don't realize that. And look how quick Microsoft implemented it.
Do you think there's room for startups to actually capture anything? Or do you think you, the incumbents like Microsoft, Google, et cetera, just kind of win? Like,
of course there is. There's brand new ways of working, brand new design patterns, and you go in, you partner up with an incumbent. All of them want help. And you use them for your data distribution. You build good experiences and you all make money. Just be aware that the cycles are very, 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 very tight.
Sorry, well, I have you. Last question for you. What do you think is the end game for a lot of these AI startups? Like, in a, it just seems like a lot are like high SaaS revenue for a short amount of time. Exit is difficult. Do you view like stability as acquiring a lot of companies in the space or no?
No, we're just built. Our national subsidiaries are partnering with all the top family offices. And we've got strategic investments coming in from all the top multinationals. We'll be working with all the Web3 chains and we're building up a Web3 practice because this is the missing component. We'll be infrastructure. We'll be the infrastructure layer provider. And then others build on top of the infrastructure, and you can build amazing things there. There will be consolidation waves and others, but capital is not going to be in shortage for the coming years in this. It is one of the biggest step changes in humanity ever. There'll be a far bigger economic impact than the pandemic. I'm not sure which direction. And so I think, you know, just build. Just remember that. And do not prematurely monetize. Focus on good business dynamics and CAC LTVs and other things, because none of the models that you use this year will be used in 1 year. ChatGPT is only 7 months old, and it's only 300 days since stable diffusion. Think about that.
Ahmad, last question for you, because we're out of time, but what do you think is the thing that most people get completely wrong about AI that just pisses you off? You wake up, you see the tweet, you're like, oh, I can't believe people have this view. What is that?
I think it's the open side. Again, all of the infrastructure of the world pretty much runs on Linux and MySQL. All of the governments and regulated industry and IP-rich data and private data of the world run on open auditable models. The TAM of that side is so much bigger than the proprietary models, and people don't get it. But they will. They're coming around to it now.
Ahmad, thank you so much. Awesome having you on. I hope we could do this again soon.
Hey, everybody. It's a pleasure.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Delphi podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on your podcast app, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter or LinkedIn. Stay tuned for our next episode, out soon.